Blog Talk Radio.
New York City, 1920. The First World War was over. Flush with victory and dreams of riches, America was ready for something new. Manhattan was the place to be. New Yorkers were feeling confident and sassy.
We had close to 20 newspapers. There was almost 80 Broadway theaters. The subways cost a nickel. Babe Ruth was playing in the Bronx.
People are watching the invention of the assembly line. The whole idea of the middle class is being invented, the idea of middle class leisure and middle class consumerism. We see the invention of the radio as we know it. We see the first talkies.
With the wedding bells ringing merrily, the organ booming forth its impressive message.
Oh, shut up.
There's a kind of awestruck mood at how much is going on.
The connoisseurs of the new culture could be found at a daily lunch, at a circular table, inside a hotel called the Algonquin. They became known as the Algonquin Roundtable.
They were underemployed writers and editors, and they just enjoyed each other's company, and they all had an affection for the English language.
All the things I really like to do are either immoral, illegal, or fattening.
That woman speaks 18 languages and can't say no in any of them.
Why don't you get out of that wet coat and into a dry martini?
Every day for 10 years, this group of wisecrackers, wordsmiths, poets, and cynics would breathe new life into American humor and captivate the public with their effortless wit.
Anything can happen, but it usually doesn't.
Beauty is only skin deep, but ugly goes clean to the bone.
It was the era of, like they said, wonderful nonsense.
The Algonquin Roundtable was part of a decade that, while it lasted, would be unlike any in history.
Welcome to In Our Craft or Selling Art, and I am your host, Richard Weissman, and this is Late Night Poets. We are the largest group on the largest poetry site on the internet, and that's called allpoetry.com. And we are going to bring you some poetry inspired by the Algonquin Roundtable. And to help do that, let me bring on my co-host. This should be Neutron right here. Let me see if it is.
Hey.
Hey, Neutron.
It's Neutron.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. So we do have some other callers. Let me bring them on. 715, you're on the air.
Hi, Richard. Hi, Neutron. It's Pam. Good to hear you both.
Hi, Pam.
Hi, Pam. Glad you could join us for this
evening of
the Algonquin Roundtable. And I'm using some new technology. I'm hoping that my sound quality is improved from previous shows.
It's very cool.
Good. Yeah, I was using old technology like the Bluetooth, and now I've actually, my wife, another Pam, actually said, why aren't you just using the earbuds? I was like, I don't know. So I'm using earbuds, and they seem to be working pretty well. So let's start off the way that we always do. Neutron, what'd you think of that clip?
Look, I always think your introductions, number one, are quite unique compared to the other shows. But on top of that, they also always give you a context for the show if you don't know anything going in, and I really appreciate that. As far as the context goes for the Algonquin Roundtable, geez, they would have been some fun lunches to attend, that's for sure. And I think it just predicated how U.S. was actually traveling at the time as well. And it was a time of great change and flux. And it sounds like it would have been a fun time to be around.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, so I'm I'm kind of in my wheelhouse because this is the era that I've kind of studied, 1914 to 1945. So we're right smack dab in the middle of it, that interwar period. And you had mentioned Dorothy Parker. I love Dorothy Parker. And she was like one of the core members of the roundtable. So glad we could do this. And Pam, I don't know, did you have a chance to hear that clip?
I did not hear the clip. I will say, though, I think this was a great prompt choice. I, too, really enjoyed Dorothy Parker and her sense of humor. She was actually someone I considered doing a show on, you know, and so I'm really glad you featured this particular group of authors. And I have to agree with Neutron that it would be fabulous and fun to be able to have had hung out with them and had dinner with them in conversation.
Absolutely, yeah. I think actually, aside from like Harpo Marx, they collectively were the most underrated group of the era. It's like everyone thinks of that era, thinks of the big kind of like, you know, monolithic genius names like T.S. Eliot and William Butler Yeats and James Joyce. But meanwhile, these guys that met, guys and gals that met every week, every day in New York City were just geniuses, very understated and a real genius. So I'm glad we have a chance to celebrate them. And of course, LNP, the members came through once again with some amazing poetry inspired by the prompts. So Neutron, normally I give you the board, but I want to actually feature a special offering that came to us because I think it's just a great way for us to start our evening of poetry. And so I'm going to pull it from the list here. See, normally you do this, and you're so good at it, you make it seem so flawless, so I'm fumbling around to keep up with you, but I'm going to get there. Okay, so let me put this into the room so you guys can see what we're doing. Okay, so this is the poem. It has a SoundCloud. You're going to see in a second. It has a SoundCloud, but I wanted you guys to be able to follow along. So I think you can do that now. Okay.
I went to a marvelous luncheon at the Algonquin with Naomi and Phil. Pam R and Guy and Dee were a little late, and Gray and Harkle Parker joined the party. And of course, St. Peter guarded the gate. There was badinage, which was hilarious, though Rex thought it all supercilious. The first toast was made by our Wiseman, then Laurent lauded the ladies as only he can. Martha Ghetto started singing at midnight and didn't stop singing for hours. We knew the excitement was bound to begin when Captain B2 got blind on Duboni and Gin. The Duke of STP was dancing with me when poetic Picasso screamed, Fiddle-dee-dee, ripped up his thesaurus and set himself free. I couldn't have liked it more.
So, like I said, I just thought, you know, here we are, our own little cyberspace roundtable, and what a great way to open the show with a tribute to LNP and some of the personalities that make all this happen. And Neutron, what'd you think?
I think that was a great way to start the show. I was going to go all serious and stuff, but I have to say that is such a great way to highlight LNP and our own little Algonquin table that we have every week, every day, sometimes even twice a day. And I thought it was such a whimsical poem, and what a luncheon that would be. From my point of view, maybe one day when I haul ass over to the U.S., that will happen in real life. But alas, for now, I will settle for Martha Gettle across the airwaves rather than being serenaded in person. I just thought it was a brilliant way to start the show.
Yeah, I agree. I thought this was an instant LNP classic. When I read it, listened to it, and the first thing I did was send it to fill my eyes to Jean so that she could enjoy it as well, which she did. And I loved the rhymes. It was fun. It was really just typical Algonquin Roundtable, you know, brought into our world. And I thought it was just very clever, just a great write. And, you know, it's always wonderful to do this work and know that someone actually appreciates it and is being celebrated by someone. And so this was, a really nice way of tying everything together. And Pam, I'm going to give you final word. What'd you think?
Oh, I absolutely enjoyed this. The first time I read it, and I liked the humor, the nod towards LNP. And, you know, I had never thought about it before until both you and Nutron said something, is that we do have in our shows our own kind of Algonquin roundtable, you know, our own sharing of thoughts with both, you know, serious thoughts and humorous thoughts. And, yeah, this was definitely a great fun write by Weaver and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, now I am turning the board over to you, Neutron.
Good, because I just dropped one like a split second before you said that. So I was like, I hope I'm not overstepping.
Not at all. No, I actually stepped on your toes. So.
Oh, well, that's all right. It's a bit of a dance, and I'm not a good dancer either, so I'm used to it. So we've got a – I'm going to give this one a read by Eric Daniel Herman, and it's called Fridge Magnet Poetry. One, wave after crisis-shaped wave crash onto the shore of the 21st century. Ice caps melt and form tsunamis as the plastic sea spills sludge into the streets of our colossal sandcastle beach sand cities. Space age machines and color TVs, the baby boomers popped post-nuclear and Cold War champagne, blasting the economy into a state of dizzying hungover recession and eventual come-down depression. The emergence of scientific arrogance cloaked in a gimmick-shaded cape enlightened the funeral service of God and cast a shade of nihilism darker than what Nietzsche might have ever predicted. Quantum physics figured it out until the light split and caused a blackout. Entangled in a mess, we have realized how we miss the warm fireside bliss of myth and tribal communion. With all this devastation, the heaviest burden, the most bitter pill, an ever-growing medicine cabinet which crawls backwards into the jungle where nature's pharmacological seeds still heal the deepest wounds. Is that we exist in the time of fridge magnet poetry, from biblical verse to quantum definitions of the material down to matters of the heart. Romanticism strung in golden strands through all nature and eventually into the depth of the unconscious, studying and interpreting dreams among the surreal, mind-bending themes. Perhaps I am an anomaly, a test tube baby chained to the bookshelves in my old town library, reading each line as if my eyes were absorbing the ink through the air as an oxygen-giving and brain-blowing tonic. Philosophers have been the creators and legislators of society for all of recorded history. Their quills testify on those brilliant canvas paintings, leaving the STEM sciences to mathematically catch up when their numbers checked out. Plato and Aristotle spoke to this fact in the Great Grecian Symposium. Shelley penned protest verse in divine defense of the importance. Yeats' notion, the guise and fundamentals of intuition-based poetics, with the sentence wrestling taking a back seat, smelling the sweet instinct-scented roses which Eliot wrote about in pointed prose. Essay after essay of artistic assessment of the metaphysical poets and the modern emergence, Dare we question the machine which invented all computing machines and controls the functions of complex organs, pumping blood around the clock and inhaling oxygen before exhaling a new element, all in independent, unconscious, meticulous precision, that neuronal miracle which processes thousands of stimuli in the blink of an eye and sifts and sieves through the sensory sleeves in the kingdom where our sleep meets dreams, forming the simulation we call reality. 3. In the search for health and comfort, with surplus stacked up for doomsday and hoarded riches, which it seems in our greed we may squeeze through a needle's eye, riding on the back of military-trained camels, guns and bombs and jets, and nitrous mustard gases, we have sacrificed our souls and labeled it a mental health crisis in the fat cat capitalist pursuit of pushing pills until we sit in a drooling mess as a shell of the genius our nature has evolved to shape us with. But in this dualistic paradox, it should be suggested that the definite certainty of physical exploration is known, but what of our souls? The rotten pit, without compassion or gratitude, our souls have gone to hell while we live in this plastic materialistic heaven. In a limp whimper, we devour the Great Mother. In a whimper, this world will end, leaving behind the godforsaken fridge magnet poetry and poem.
Great read, Neutron, and not an easy read either. That was quite a poem. A little bit longer than what we normally do here, but his work is just such, you know, he doesn't write light, and I really appreciate that, and he never disappoints. Here he illuminates the pain of metamodernist life out of balance while casting the nostalgic poetic eye back through the history of literature, how we devolve from romantics like Shelley through modernists like Yeats and Eliot to our fridge magnet poetry era 2022, all accomplished through enticing wordplay, double entendre, literary allusions galore. A limp whimper indeed, just a wonderful piece. Wow. And I'm going to actually have Pam tell us what she thinks of this one.
Well, this one was powerful and certainly a lot to delve into. Amazing imagery and metaphors. I'm certainly glad that he decided not to edit this three separate rants that, you know, kind of almost feels like a villanelle. The villanelle or vignette, that's what I'm thinking of, vignette, sorry. And I like this all the way through, though I have to say the third rant is definitely my favorite in the idea of us as a violent society destroying ourselves. I particularly like our nature has evolved to shape us with, but in this dualistic paradox, it should be suggested that the definite journey of physical expiration is known, but what of our souls, the rotten pit without comparison or gratitude? You know, I really like this all the way through, and it's a brilliant write, and to me it strongly speaks of not only the impact of poetry throughout history, but how we seem to, in some ways, have lost a respect not only for that particular art form, but for life in general, and so powerful and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, go ahead. Tell us why you picked this one and what you thought.
Well, firstly, it's a tour de force as far as I'm concerned, as far as rants are gone. This is one of the best stream of consciousness rants I've read. And as Pam mentioned from the author note, I'm very glad that it wasn't edited. It retained that power. I think I was drawn to, we have sacrificed our souls and labeled it a mental health crisis in the fat cat capitalist pursuit of pushing pills until we sit in a drooling mess as a shell of the genius. And it was both scathing and brilliant, and an indictment of the 21st century up to 2022, as you mentioned there, Richard. So very well done.
Absolutely, yeah. Really special piece. Okay, where would you like to go?
Okay, so I will get Pam to read S. Sharp's poem, The Natural Beauty of Downtown, when you're ready, Pam.
Absolutely. All right. And The Natural Beauty of Downtown by S. Sharp. I took up tall building mirrored images of blue sky. Tell me everything is all right. Inside, beautiful paintings of nature greet me. I breathe in conditioned air as I enjoy the views. Winding rivers, fog-covered bogs provided to me. But I feel a bit of chill, if I am being honest. I walk outside and around this modern Taj Mahal, as sometimes I forget what the mountains look like. Purple dribbling over shades of gray hidden. As I see you have started your next project, it's a beauty. The way the sun shines off the golden tinted windows warms my memory of how the sun feels upon my skin. Once again, I turn and look up at the reflection of the blue sky before going back inside to hike up to see the majesty of nature, the brilliance of the mountains just to the west of here. I press the button P for penthouse, the top floor. I am not allowed there, so I push 64, the highest floor I am allowed to be on. My hopes, my anticipation rise along with the elevator. Excited, I hurry to the first window. I see another building and another disappointment. It's here I see the most beautiful painting, purple snow-capped peaks. I must be above the tree line because I lose my breath and stare in awe. What beauty, but I better be going because I can feel the cold breeze blowing on me. There's a cold storm brewing. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And yeah, that was actually written to prompt 3, which is, if by any chance a playwright wishes to express a political opinion or a moral opinion or a philosophy, he must be a good enough craftsman to do it with so much spice of entertainment that the public gets the message without being aware of it. Yeah, and that's Noel Coward. And I think that really is what a good writer does in terms of political opinions, moral opinions, philosophical opinions, is to hide it in story. And I think especially in comedy, it has to be hidden in the jokes. So I like that he addressed the prompt, and I especially liked, I press the button P for penthouse, the top floor, but I am not allowed there. So I push the highest floor I am allowed to be on. My hopes, my anticipation rise along with the elevator. Excited, I hurry to see the first window. Excited, I hurry to the first window I see. I thought this was just full of stunning imagery, powerful metaphors, and surreal setting to make this a laudable piece. I was drawn in and along for the urban ride throughout. It was a great word painting of interwar downtown New York City, just a real strong offering. And Neutron, what'd you think?
You know, on second read, I get an almost vivid imagery of the glass ceiling that everyone at some point has hit in their life. And I just thought it was a touch of brilliance given the prompt that you just read there, Richard. The grandeur of the buildings with the paintings of the natural environment that have been displaced by said buildings The lack of access to the penthouse floor, save for the privilege of a few with means and funds to monopolize a view once available to all. The hanging of the painting, the glimpse of nature on the way up to the 64th floor being displaced by yet another building. And I think that as Sharp has done exactly what the prompt asked for. He's hidden that message in his storytelling. Very well done.
Absolutely, yeah. I guess I thought it, but I actually didn't say it, so I'm glad you did. Yeah, he's hiding the political opinion about that, you know, that glass ceiling in society with the metaphor of the button P for penthouse, and he's not allowed there. So just really strong. And Pam, as reader, I will give you final word on this piece. What'd you think?
Yeah, this was amazing. I really like how it was like a kind of extended metaphor. I really like what Neutron had to say about that search for the glass ceiling, and with the irony in this one that the glass ceiling isn't allowed to be reached, and the person acknowledges that and doesn't really even try, only goes as far as they think they're allowed to go. There's a real sense of imprisonment, a real sense of limitations. I think this, my favorite part was the part where it says, I walk outside around this modern Taj Mahal, and so, as sometimes I forget what the mountains look like. I think, it's that idea for that search for peace and harmony in the hustle and bustle of the modern world. So beautifully written and very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. Absolutely. Okay, Neutron.
All right, so next we have a fair few carryovers from our last week's episode. I had no idea that Chuck Palahniuk was going to be so popular, and we had quite a few callers with some great comments. One of them was Pam. And so I'm going to bring up the next poem. And Richard, if you can give Mandy 42's poem a read, that would be great.
Yep, absolutely. So this is Mandy 42, and she actually came in with her own prompt from the novel Choke, and it is, what I want is to be needed. What I need is to be indispensable to somebody. Who I need is somebody that will eat up all my free time, my ego, my attention, somebody addicted to me, a mutual addiction, which actually, now that I read it, was one of the prompts. So inspired by that is a poem Mandy 42 wrote called A Chat with Chuck. And it goes like this. This used to be me, Chuck. I read this and wonder if you're pointing your finger under the warped roof of my abandoned cottage. This is how Mom and Dad did it too. And this isn't a childhood trauma whine. It's just a fact of how they operated heavy machinery. Everything was, hun, what now, hun? Let's do this, hun. I loved them to pieces, and they needed each other to pieces. Now they hold on like the last day of winter, wrapping each other tight. I thank whichever God you like for that. So the goal is interdependence. Got it? I'm winking at you. Where Honey Pie can go dress shopping without security, and Baby Cakes can go play with his balls on the green. No need for policies and procedures. But I wanted the addiction I'd been raised on. To be needed, as vital as water, and all the big organs. I wanted to make it in somebody's eyes. Be the only one. The best thing to happen, the sun, baby, the sun. I wanted that man who was emotionally ready to leap into a burning building. as available as a hooker on a street corner with no food stamps left for supper. Poor dear going down. I'm an addictive personality. It took me a long time to recognize and evict my flesh painkiller, temporary painkiller, with all the worst side effects, short breath, bleeding, shakes, crumpled paper shit. I realized that bad mouths open too long, run out of good things to say. Hands that hold you too tight will cut off your air supply. So I sawed off all my body parts that didn't belong to me into the compost, broke them down good. Now when I want to feel like the sun, I go and stand underneath it. I feel pretty fine, and I'm always the bright spot. End of poem. Neutron. We can start off with you.
Surely. I just thought this was such a multi-layered poem. I'm in love with the way it made me feel, and I think that Mandy and I have that in common, the thoughts that were transcribed in this poem. As one with an addictive personality also, I've heard the saying, see the addiction through the good times and the bad. Don't just neg-rave your way through the good parts, whether it's a substance or flesh misuse, so this part hit home. I realize that bad mouths open too long, run out of good things to say, hands that hold you too tight. So I thought of all body parts that didn't belong to me into the compost, broke them down good. Now when I want to feel like the sun, I go and stand underneath it. I feel pretty fine, and I'm always the bright spot. Well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. I, too, really identified with this piece. I thought it was such a powerful response to the prompt, confessional tone that was highly identifiable for me. As I, too, am in recovery from emotional dysfunction of childhood, and I'm not whining about it either. I love that. I love how she stated that up front early on in the poem, just relating how my journey led to this present state. Great piece. And Pam, I'm not sure if you had a chance to read this one.
I did, actually. I didn't really get to hear all of
Great.
It. You don't read it all, but yeah. This is another one that's powerful. I do like that she picked a different prompt, and I like how she uses the tone as if she was talking to the author, talking to the character. And I really like, so the goal is interdependence, got it? I'm winking at you, where Honey Pie can go dress shopping with security, and Baby Case can go play with his balls on the green, no need for policies and procedures. But I wanted the addiction I'd been raised on to be needed as vital as water and all the big organs. Wonderful lines there, just a brilliant write and on the codependence and the need to, you know, be there for everyone and anyone, and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment there. And with that, I'm turning it back to you, Neutron.
Okay, so I'm going to give Rose Winter 515's poem a read. It's called Inspired Love. Love is its own reward. It costs no money, only your heart. Love is true. Love is only your heart. It costs no money. Endures forever. Overcoming death gives fresh hope and happiness to souls who believe in love forever. True love endures for eternity. End poem.
Great read, Neutron. Yeah, you know, this was a really interesting shape for the shape poem. You can't really see it on the radio, but it looks like a vase to me. I thought it was just a nicely crafted shape poem. And I am a romantic. What can I tell you, despite despite the state of the world and all that, I still am a romantic at heart. I felt this was a very sweet, romantic piece. And so I liked it. And Pam, what'd you think?
Yeah, I do have to agree with you. It is sweet and romantic. The interesting thing about shape poems is, you know, you mentioned a vase, and I said, oh, yeah, it does look like that. But when we first started reading it, the first thing my mind went to is that it looked like the tip of an arrow, you know, and which made me, of course, think of Cupid and, you know, the god, the Roman god of love. And, you know, it's always interesting with shape poems that, you know, what people see. And this was a wonderful brevity all the way through. But I especially like, love is its own reward and endures forever. Overcoming death gives fresh hope. You know, I think hope is such a beautiful thing to have. And this was very well done.
Absolutely. And Neutron, as reader, I'll give you final word on this one.
So I'm refreshed by the optimistic take on love here. And it reminds me of what a friend of mine recently said, that you can't embark on dating if there's not a sense of optimism. And I feel it also applies to love. And without a sense of trust in the unknown, you cannot love. So an interesting take and a lighthearted change up for today's show. So very well done.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it was especially refreshing for the Palahniuk show, right? They were very dark pieces. Okay, so where would you like to go?
All right, I'm just seeing if it posted. Okay, it did. So if I can get Richard, you to read this one by Lawrence 67.
Okay. So this is Lawrence 67. It's to the prompt. It's another carryover, the Palahniuk. Have your adventures, make your mistakes, and choose your friends poorly. All these will make for great stories. And Lawrence 67 wrote a poem. It's called To Be or Not to Be. That is, never mind. The Adventures of Nigel the Fat Cat and his homie Alfie. Nigel, to be or be, that is the question. Alfie, huh? So what's the answer? Nigel, that is the answer. Alfie, what is? Nigel, that is. Alfie, what is? Nigel, right. Alfie, who's on first? Nigel, I don't know. Alfie, no. I don't know is on second. Nigel, so who's on first? Alfie, right. Nigel, write what? Alfie, he's on third. Nigel, who is? Alfie, know who is on first. Nigel, she. Alfie, I'm gonna kick your ass. Come here. Don't you run. Come here so I can put my size 2 baby paw booty all up in your ass. Alfie, goodbye, help. End of poem. Okay, that was fun. I'm going to just go and say that was fun, funny riffing off the prompt, nice change of pace, another nice change of pace from the heavier fare of most of the entries in the contest from 2 weeks ago. So nice job. Okay, Pam, what'd you think?
I really enjoy the Alfie and Nigel write. And the back and forth and the humor in them. I did think it was a great change of pace. To me, the humor really stood in the way they took two famous question type things that are completely on the opposite end, you know, like from Shakespeare, to be or not to be, that is the question. And then going into the all famous and well-known humor act of who's on first, the transition and the personality that comes through in that, I think was just really a great way to display that humor. So very well done.
Great comment, Pam. So I apologize. I've got someone on hold. I don't know how long they've been on hold. Let me bring them on the air. 763, you're on the air.
Hey, Richard. Hey, Richard, it's Sam. I mean, that's the Sam. It's Dexter. Sorry, I said my real name.
Hey, Dexter, how you doing? Dexter, I am going to apologize. I don't know. Were you on hold for a long time?
No, I just literally called. I've probably been in 30 seconds.
Oh, excellent.
Awesome. Yeah, because it's been kind of quiet. So every once in a while, I'll kind of like check back, and I'm like, oh, man, someone's on hold. So
yeah,
it worked
no.
out. Well, I'm so glad you could join us.
Yeah, I'm glad
awesome.
I could be here.
Did you have a chance? Yeah, absolutely. Did you have a chance to hear that piece?
No, I did not. I will give it a look over later, but I don't want to jump in and comment, just rambling kind of. So.
Sure. Oh, no. No worries. So, Neutron, I'll give you final word on this piece.
Sure. I don't know what was more of a slapstick vibe, that introduction or the last poem, but both of them were giving me Larry Moe and Curly vibes, that's for sure. It was an interesting take on the prompt, have your adventures, make your mistakes, and choose your friends poorly. All these make for great stories. The dialogue was fast-paced, and Richie, you did a great job at reading it as well. Very impressed with both of you.
Well, you know that that I've written a couple of plays. So one of the things that used to drive my wife crazy when I was writing them was that I would actually repeat all the lines of all the characters out loud over and over again. So I've got a little bit of practice in doing dialogue with characters. Okay,
yeah.
With that, I am going to turn it back to you, Neutron, for the next piece.
All right. Oh, good. I'm not on mute. Excellent. Dexter, because you're our newest arrival, I'm going to get you to read the next piece by Betty Page.
All right. Starting off with a bang here. This is Betty Page, Sex Addicts and Saints, number 4061. Sex addicts and saints, tensions building high, pulled towards romantic riptides, idealistic rides, mere ghost of myself, slow motion running up hills, never reaching peaks, I'm always searching for that pot of gold, above neon rainbows, carelessly loving, sane to be effing insane. Saints a sex addict, drowning in pure lust, visualizing fantasies yet to be fulfilled. Time drifts slowly past, drifting, floating, spinning fast. Day in, day out's old. Chaos surrounding, advice continually, just ad nauseum. I want to live free. I'm shedding all skins of snakes, cascading released, down descending sweet. So far away, I've left the fool who just jumps, a gypsy always, without nothing, I'm happy. None will control now, time. I don't need to please them, no. I have freed myself, naked all alone. Through city streets, I surf waves, riding energy. I'm very sweet, I could be, should be bitter. I'm better than that. So call me insane, a saint, tease, or sex addict. I care not anymore. End poem.
Great read, Dexter. And Pam, if we could start comments off with you, what'd you think?
Yes. Well, first of all, Dexter did a wonderful read of that. This is a powerful write, and I have to say, definitely, I would say one of my all-time favorites of Betty's, and I like a lot of her writing, but this one has particularly strong and emotive imagery, and I like that it's about that person that finds hope, but they don't find it because of the world around them being perfect, but rather they live in this horrible, dark, dangerous environment of addiction and people using each other, and, you know, but they live in this, in their mind, this idea, this dream of wanting to be free. I really especially like, I want to live free. I'm shedding all skins of snakes, cascading release down descending sweet. So far away now, I've left the fool who just jumps. You know, and powerful lines there. You know, and I like the end too. So call me insane, a saint, tease, or sex addict. I care not anymore. I like how those lines speak on, I'm not going to be a one-dimensional character. There are many sides to me, and presenting those, you can think me insane if you want, but, you know, it doesn't matter to me. I am. And so powerful write and very well done.
Excellent insights there, Pam. Yeah, I too really love the uninhibited expression of human sexuality, the reexamination of our innate nature, sans moralistic shaming, and all driven home via an implicit lyricism that seemed to me song-like. And just really, really strong. And Dex, you did a great job in reading it and bringing that to life for us. So I appreciate that too. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Sure. I thought it was very interesting and a great fast-paced read by Dexter. On the shedding of societal norms for something more spicy in flavor. There seemed to be a sexual awakening abound in this piece, not answering to anyone, being authentic to one's needs and wants. And it riffs with the prompt, as you would say, Richard, quite well in that sometimes we need to lose it all to have that freedom. The judgment of the saints and sinners is misplaced, and you ought just be happy in your own skin. So I thought it was a great poem.
Excellent comment. And Dexter, as our reader, I'll give you final word on the piece.
I don't know. Everybody kind of sounds like Moore's code right now. Can you guys hear me okay, or should I call back?
We hear you well.
Okay, all right, then I'll call back after because everybody else sounds choppy to me. I'll make my comment. But
okay.
I feel like this really brings us into the mindset and like kind of a look into, you know, an addiction too that kind of opened my eyes to it. It's almost like it's fun, like about drug addicts. It's like you're searching back for that first time getting your high is what everybody talks about. The sex addict thing is I'm always searching for that pot of gold because obviously it looks like she puts in here, you know, out on the streets, you know, you can cook up your next fantasy that you're trying to make happen. And that can lead, I guess, probably into that cycle is that, it's about the next one that you know, and bringing it further and going like this. So it was just an eye-opening write to me because it is almost opposite of the drug or substance abuse addict. You know, they're chasing that first time high, which so it was just very insightful and very well done.
Great comment. Okay, and with that, I'm turning it back to you, Neutron, for our next piece.
Okay, so I think it's Pam's time to read. I've kind of lost track, but Pam, if you're up for it, if you can give Versus Goliath's poem a read, that would be great.
I'm happy to do that. Spaghetti Limbic System by Versus Goliath, and it goes like this. A ledge holds the teetering pasta product, noodles suspended by inertial friction inclined in such a way to remind of aqueducts, the arch-supported spill all over a kitchen, cleaning starchy water from the porcelain absorbing into a paper towel and spreading seams like a ceremony, kneeling again, wadded-up paper thrown at deity's head, a whack-a-mole making holes in the backyard. Okay, not really. Not into animal cruelty, honestly. Releasing pressure, building and sprinkling sprinkler guard, knotted cord pushing liters of well water at me, baking in the sun like homemade bread, skin slowly turning brown as cooking persists. Nan, too. A monsoon descends suddenly. Soggy toast fresh off rack of interspersed storms. Crackers follow brilliant electric streams. Actual closeness of disaster hits home. Lost power and communication in extremes. In the end, how long until found dead alone? End poem.
Nicely read there, Pam. Yeah, I thought this was an excellent wordplay, an extended metaphor, a strong riffing off of the prompt. And the prompt was, just for the record, the weather today is calm and sunny, but the air is full of bullshit. And yeah, nicely crafted throughout. Excellent piece. And I saw it got a well-deserved honorable mention in the contest. And let's see, Dexter, your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, this was
are you on mute?
Just a very, very interesting write. And, you know, it just seems like it captures one of those moments when you're cooking and you're looking out. Like, I just picture I shouldn't say this, actually, because I was going to say but I cook spaghetti. I was going to say I picture a woman, though. I don't know why I was picturing a woman reading this. Maybe it was because of Pam reading it. But just looking out the kitchen window and just having and just thinking, you know, and it's like, because it's almost like in between taking the noodles off and in between doing this, it's like there's something going on outside, and it's almost like it's cutting between her thoughts of looking out the window to her thoughts of looking down to what she's doing. And it's just, I don't know, it's just a very intriguing write, and I just enjoyed it a lot.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, your thoughts.
Yeah, I'm actually quite impressed with Dexter's interpretation there. I didn't actually think about the juxtaposition between the inside and the outside, but it just drills home to me that it is quite a cerebral write, even with the extended metaphor. I think it has a tongue-in-cheek vibe to it as well, particularly I enjoyed the observations here, baking in the sun like homemade bread, skin slowly turning brown as cooking persists, none too soon, monsoon descends suddenly, soggy toast fresh off rack of interspersed storms. It was quite a unique take on the everyday, and I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Great insights. And Pam, as reader, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like what both Dexter and Neutron had to say. You know, it does feel like the mundane and the everyday and wanting to escape it. I really like how there was a bite to the humor and you mentioned there was great wordplay, you know, and yeah, I just thought it was a really well done write on the whole idea, as I said, of wanting get away from the I guess, yeah, mundane of that moment as you're just cleaning up messes without any sense of gratification. So excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay. And where would you like to go next, Neutron?
I carry over, and then we're going to get back onto the Algonquin roundtable. So if Richard, you could give Jack Blue's poem a read, that would be great.
Okay, sure. So this is by Jack Blue. It's called A Witch's Ballad Number 2. I live the theater, play a silhouette of life, or disguise myself in soul like an animated ghost, be another marionette of some crazy storyteller. The curtain falls to rise again with a shadow of applause when I conjure up a wand from inside my cardigan, smoothly or spontaneously, as if no one were behind. Shall I play a fairy's part around the field of sapphire, decorate my wand in pink, and let it twinkle gorgeously in the sweet nocturnal blue as a comet paints the sky? Should I really be so sweet, so romantic, or so noble with my weird fairy tale, mirroring the grim mirage of my previous witch's dream, like a double photograph? No, I'll live no fairy tale. If tomorrow soars on sand, or a sea of hazy beads whirling tearfully to freeze through another universe in mad, dizzy serpent's curse, mute the fantasies of time, keep it slithering like slime, or let it hover aimlessly around its prime identity. A bad illuminated ghost beckon their sorry coast. Turn the wand of amethyst to the auroral pentacle in quest of donkey's miracle, like an old saxophonist playing for today or something really gray. End of poem. Okay. Neutron, why don't we start it off with you? What'd you think?
Sure. Give me one second. I'll just jump back into the poem. So I was drawn to this section here. No, I'll live no fairyland if tomorrow soars on sand or a sea of hazy beads whirling tearfully to freeze through another universe in mad, dizzy serpent's curse. I admire the way that Jack has answered the prompt from Chuck Palahniuk's Invisible Monsters. If death meant just leaving the stage long enough to change costume and come back as a new character, would you slow down or speed up? I think he's incorporated vivid imagery. There is a lyrical quality to this rite, and on a technical basis, I was impressed with the internal rhyme, assonance, and alliteration. Nicely done.
Yeah, that's an excellent comment. I was truly impressed with the lyricism. I do read these out loud before I comment and make my notes. And it struck me as lyrical before, but reading it on the air, it kind of like heightens everything. And I kind of just fell in love with the words. And it's always a nice thing, very captivating, and a nice riffing off of the prompt. Very well done. And let's do one more, because I know we kind of fell behind 2 weeks ago, so I want to make sure we don't do it again. So let's take one more.
I was just
Pam,
about to PM you that
word.
Egg.
I don't know if you caught that, Pam.
Oh, I did not. I apologize. Okay. Yeah, this is
That's
wonderful.
Okay.
And a great one because while it was written for the Czechoslovak contest and it does fit really well with the chosen prompt, I can't help but think that the members of the Algonquin Roundtable would have actually been very entertained by a reading of this poem at one of their dinners. You know, wonderful use of imagery, of color. I really like the part where it says, shall I play a fairy's part around the field of sapphire? Shall I really be so sweet, so romantic, so noble? No, I'll live no fairyland. And I like how this goes into the idea of I'm not going to be the part that you want me to be. I'm not going to play the character you want me to play. I shall live out my life in the way that I want. And just a really clever write and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. Okay, Neutron, where are we going?
Okay, so we've got our last carryover. This is by Dammit Dave. I'll give this one a read. It's called Need to Be Needed. I need to be needed, yet I'm all alone. My pleas go unheeded. I'm chilled to the bone. My love's unrequited. My heart's in despair. My passion's ignited with no one to share. I want to be wanted, yet I'm undesired. My daydreams are haunted by love yet acquired. Where is the affection I need to go on? I weep in abjection, all hope is now gone. End the poem.
Read, Neutron. Dexter, I'm going to give you opening take on this one.
This had that feel to it that I want you to love me. That song, it was just kind of what kicked in. It had that that lyrical quality because of the rhyming, and I don't mean that. I hate when sometimes somebody compares something, and I'm not comparing it to that. But it had that same longingness. It had that dreaminess. But it all came crashing down, and it's kind of had that almost like a dream shattered feeling. So it was very painful, right? But it had a great sound song kind of quality to it.
No, absolutely. I get that too. Yeah, I thought it was a strong rhyming scheme that was driving the poem of pain that stems from unrequited love. Very well done. And Neutron, I'll give you final word on the piece.
I agree with both of you. I thought it had this lyrically forlorn offering on the longing for love. And it was actually written to one of the more popular prompts. What I want is to be needed. What I need is to be indispensable to somebody. Who I need is somebody that will eat up all my free time, my ego, my attention, somebody addicted to me, a mutual addiction. So I thought it was a great take on the prompt.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, so where would you like to go now?
Let's have a look. We have a poem by Arendt, In Memoriam, and I believe there might be a SoundCloud.
Yep, there is. Okay, let me play that.
In Memoriam by Arendt. A lover once, and now an awkward creature. You'd think that I was born out of a goat. I'm lovely, gorgeous, dear. Each name is sweeter. To get this sinking boat to stay afloat. Were I those things, perhaps you'd not misplace my given name and fumble for your words. I see I'm now a mere familiar face. Among your aviary, another bird. My brown eyes may not hold the northern star. My hand is not a turtle dove in flight. However, still, our days are not that far. I thought my charms were slightly more than slight. But really, it is silly that I'm sore. In truth, my dear, I don't remember yours. End poem.
you for the SoundCloud or all. Okay, Pam, what did you think of this one?
Oh, this one was clever and fun. I really like how she did it in the sonnet form, which is known for a classically style form when wanting to present romance, but presents the opposite idea of romance. The idea of acknowledging one's flaws, but then the poke at the end at the person who left her. I thought my charms were slightly more than slight, but really it is silly that I'm sore. In truth, my dear, I don't remember yours. You know, just wonderful rhyme and flow, clever lines, and definitely fits very well with the chosen prompt and her nod to the style of Dorothy Parker. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. Neutron, what'd you think?
You know what? This actually reminds me of online dating. I know that's a bit of a segue, but firstly, I have to say a great comment, Pam. But this part here in relation to I thought my charms were slightly more than slight, but really it is silly that I'm sore. In truth, my dear, I don't remember yours. It reminds me of online dating because you'll be talking to a few people at once and all of a sudden you get unmatched and you don't know who you've unmatched from. So this really resonates with me. I thought it was a very clever write and a great nod to Dorothy Parker.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah. I don't know about the online dating part. So that was the last time I dated was in the 90s, in the early 90s at that.
Lucky you.
But but I will, oops, hold on one second. But I will say that I agree with you, Neutron. I thought she invoked the spirit of Parker, the rhymes, the allusion, the humor, especially the punchline ending. I thought it made a worthy tribute to her genius. And with that, I think we're ready to move on to our next one.
We certainly are. Dexter, if you can read Ken Smith's poem, Mercury, that would be great.
Absolutely. And this is Ken Smith. This is Mercury. In 88 days. He had circled your heart at 29 miles per second and snared with such speed. How could you see he was both virtuous and a trickster? Unpredictable, erratic, yet you reached out your slender hand and in your palm he became quicksilver. Deceived, your fingers clenched into a fist, and he squeezed free, slipping through your fingers. End poem.
Excellent read, Dexter. And Neutron, if we can start off with you, what'd you think?
Sure. So first, Ken chose a separate quote by Dorothy Parker. Love is like quicksilver in the hand. Leave the fingers open and it stays. Clutch it and it darts away. I thought that was an excellent take on the prompt. Deceived, your fingers clenched into a fist and he squeezed free, slipping through your fingers. It's almost riffing with another prompt that we did last week by Chuck Palahniuk, and it was something along the lines of, if you love something, let it free, but don't be surprised if it returns with herpes, but a much more eloquent and romantic take on that poem. So well done.
Yeah, I too really like this piece. I thought it was a strong offering on the prompt. And what a prompt. You know, Dorothy Parker, I know we've said it a couple of times, but my gosh, talk about underrated. What a brilliant way of expressing that truth. Quicksilver indeed. And I thought it was an excellent write on toxic love, how it can be quite intoxicating, as the brevity illustrated so well. And Dexter, as reader, I'll give you final word. What do you think?
I thought that this was a fantastic write. And, you know, that line it really struck out was virtuous and a trickster, unpredictable, erratic. You know, I sometimes have questioned myself like that, if, you know, have different past relationships been on me because I'm erratic? But it's like you make sense of it because you're doing things in your moral way, and it just, that line just struck me, and I'm still trying to process that whole part. And I thought that this was just a fantastic poem about, you know, being on the wrong side of that. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, let's move on to our next one.
Okay, so we've got a poem by Mark Lupi, and it should be a SoundCloud.
Yep.
That boy. Adventures of a generic cartoon hero, circa 1920s. Introduction. He wears a nighty, spit-slicked hair, is curlicued into a spire, goggle eyes, and in the mouth, a finger tugs at the one tooth. Bothered by Moon on Betty Boop, adopted by the Gumless Gumps. Introduction with Vaudeville. You hear? That boy ain't crazy in the head. That boy, what you said he said. With admonition, white glove fingers waving, tapping vaudeville singers. Can tell it briskly, happily vain, lightly proffering each a cane. Ingratiatingly bug-eyed in any audience to confide. That boy, he ain't no never mind. That boy, he ain't no state of mind. That boy, he undertake to drool. That boy, he never play it cool. Quavering solo. When that boy live, he do it right. He praise the Lord most every night. When that boy rub a tooth, you know, he do it cause he feel it so. When that boy run, yes, sir, yes, sir. I go on get ready to prepare, chasing. When that boy runs, he does not scream. Everyone else does. In a dream, he skips, stumbles, twirls, floats. Enormous hands are reaching out, closing on nothing. Policemen shout. Then of a sudden, the whole route dwindles to nothing. Duh, a yuck. Comes a melancholy owl. Duh, a yuck. Look at it. From here on out, his friend and pet. Grave demeanored, dark tuxedoed, with occasional spasms of libido for a passing plate of fish. Deadlines, headlines, the years flash. More chase scenes. When that boy drools, he does it polite. Nobody else does. Drools of fright. As further revolving doors are mastered, but need I say, a few disasters. More policemen come, big clubs fall, waking up in hospitals, till he gets a chance in a music hall. Dancing, dancing, dancing fool. Much applause, Enoch, waving hats, walk the cake, end of poem.
Wow. If ever a poem needed a SoundCloud, it was that poem. I mean, I'm sure we all would have done our best, but the dialects and the pacing, the whole thing just came alive with that SoundCloud. And I thought it was a very special poem indeed. He revived much of the spirit of the age, from vaudeville slapstick to black and white comic strips to the interwar era radio shows, which again harkens back to why it really needed that SoundCloud. A true entertainment tour de force. Much was risked and much was gained in this poem. Very well done. And Pam, what'd you think?
Oh, that was wonderfully entertaining. The read definitely added to the write. I like that he pays tribute to that era, that he pulls it all together. I liked it all the way through, but I especially liked the chase scene, how it did capture that classic slapstick comedy. And so just a wonderful, brilliant write all the way through and very well done.
Absolutely, yeah. Great, great comment. Chase scene was awesome. And Neutron, I'll give you final word on this piece.
Sure. I'm remiss to say exactly the same thing in relation to the SoundCloud, so I'll move on to the rest of my comment. I thought the rhyming was seamless, fast-paced, and it brought the main protagonist to life. I also think on a side note, it almost could be read with a modern lens for what is happening with police brutality in the world today. All he wants to do is dance, even figuratively stand on his head, but he is misunderstood. My favorite part, when that boy drools, he does it polite. Nobody else does, drools of fright. As further revolving doors are mastered with need, I say a few disasters. More policemen come, big clubs fall, waking up in hospitals. Till he gets a chance in a music hall, dancing, dancing, dancing fool. I thought it was very enjoyable.
Excellent comment. Okay, and with that, we're ready for our next one.
Okay, Richard, I'm going to get you up next. So when you're ready, you may read.
Okay. So, yeah, so this one, out of all the great minds in the Algonquin Roundtable, I feel one of the most underrated, one of the most brilliant is Mankiewicz, who was commonly known in that era as Mank. And most people don't even realize that he, as opposed to Orson Welles, wrote Citizen Kane. So I decided to do a kind of tribute poem, and it's called The Missing Piece, and it goes like this. Flakes of white ever cascaded earthward, dream dead myths of the young boy's smile, as his downhill racer descended through that frozen glen. Poor Charlie would never play again. Instead, invisible hands of legal guardians chess-pieced him, first to Exeter, then Harvard, Yale, Princeton. He was flushed out from the bowels of various Ivy League halls, though he smiled wide while laboring to fill the gnawing hole in his spirit. Kane always gagged on that silver spoon. Yet one item on old man Thatcher's list intrigued. I think it would be fun to run a newspaper, to print truth and serve the underprivileged. Maybe that jigsaw piece would finally fit. But no, at close of curtain, his mind clawed back as his dying breath wrapped mother, nostalgia, and joy into that single word. Rosebud. End of poem.
Excellent poem, Richard. I thought there was a forlorn quality to it while still having that nuance, and I felt the loss of innocence conveyed in the first stanza through defining one's niche and finding that puzzle piece on death's door. My favorite part was flakes of white ever cascaded earthward, dream dead myths of the young boy smile as his downhill racer descended through that frozen glen. Poor Charlie would never play again. Instead, invisible hands of legal guardians chess-pieced him.
apt storytelling and vivid imagery throughout, and well worth the FPP. So congratulations. Clever job.
Thanks, Neutron.
And no worries. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was an amazing tribute. I did not actually know that this guy wrote Citizen Kane and not Orson Welles. So I was happy to learn something new. You know, to me, there's a kind of a nostalgic sadness to this, because it really speaks on the idea of, to me, on a genius searching for meaning in life, and the almost disappointment of not quite being able to grasp it despite, you know, despite accomplishments. And I did particularly like it. I did like it all the way through, but particularly that second stanza, and then, you know, the line, maybe that jigsaw piece would finally fit, but no, a close of curtain, his mind clawed back as his dying breath. Wonderful lines there, Richard, and very well done.
Thanks, Pam.
And Dexter, I'll give you final words.
Yeah, this piece was fantastic, Richard. You know, it had feels to it of, you know, what supposedly, you know, the different speeches, things that almost got, you know, that the JFK was giving before he was assassinated. And it just, to me, it just feels like that person that's in that silver spoon kind of world that doesn't really buy in, you know, that like, let's, what did you say here? Let's, to print the truth, to serve the underprivileged. There's a lot of people that are dead that had that vision. And so I thought it was a powerful piece.
Thanks so much, Dexter. Okay, so with that, we're ready to move on. And where would you like to go?
All right, so I'll give this one a read. It's by James George, and it's called My First Sonnet. Having once entered the Inner Cool Breath annual poetry contest, my first critically acclaimed event, I submitted a sonnet that I was confident would be competitive. Little did I know, queued were 100 poets who had waited 10 years for the slightest nod of recognition. Therefore, the criteria for winning the Cool Breath included writing masterful verses for 10 years, patiently waiting for the poets at the head of the line to die off. End of poem.
So, I love this one. Very funny. It reminded me of the quote by W.C. Field, comedy is merely tragedy happening to someone else. And the poem reminded me of that quote that stated, I knew the pain in this poem firsthand as well. And I thought it was very nicely done. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I'll read what the prompt was, actually, because I think that gives some great context. If you have any young friends who aspire to become writers, the second greatest favor you can do them is to present them with copies of The Elements of Style. The first greatest, of course, is to shoot them now while they're happy, by Dorothy Parker. And I have to say, the poem was scathing, but after having myself entered a few poems competitively, certainly an apt prizal, and I like the take on the prompt and also the wise words provided by Dorothy Parker. I think my favorite part was, therefore, the criteria for winning the Cool Breath included writing masterful verses for 10 years, patiently waiting for the poets at the head of the line to die off. A tongue-in-cheek write, very well done.
Absolutely. And Pam, I'll give you final word.
All right. Yeah, this one was definitely fun. I liked the dark humor in it. I liked the idea of how, you know, we have such confidence and so full of ourselves and our sense of hope in our youth. and it kind of at some point kind of just gets, you know, whacked down. And the idea, it fits so well. It's a great take on the prompt, especially, you know, with the idea of waiting years for even the slightest nod of recognition. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, Neutron, what's next?
Okay, so we have three poems and a classic up our sleeve, so we can probably go back to normal comments. And this one is by Jack Blue. And Pam, if you would like to give it a read, that would be great.
I would be happy to. All right. A Cat's Fantasia, number 3, by Jack Blue. Avoiding Raven's conference on their masquerade of mind, I hurried intermittently down to Bremen's memory, or that heroic donkey's tomb, the theater's musicality, wandering about the soul of airy actual full of flair. I found his cool memorial beckoning in rock and roll and its moonlit epigraph speaking silently to me. Let my shabby shadow shout till its spooky sparkles sprout. It should soon be fading slow. In 1, 2, 3 weeks or so, Raymond always braves in bloom when your bluish leaves loom. The lunar violet piano showering around the stone, resounding like a gospel glow to my violin mind, though I simply stood or sat like a dog about to scat. Roaming home, I found the ravens hovering away like remembering the sky. They sounded royal blue. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And that was inspired by the quote, at dramatic rehearsals, the only author that's better than an absent one is a dead one, which is a quote by George S. Kaufman, who was one of the charter members of the Roundtable. And I loved Let My Shabby Shadow Shout Till Its Spooky Sparkles Sprout. It should soon be fading slow in 1, 2, 3 weeks or so. Bremen always brays and bloom when your bluish leaves loom. I love, Jack Blue went with this, the tale of good ambiguity that makes you wonder if your protagonist was merely absent or spooky indeed and deceased. And, you know, also the wonderful wordplay and alliteration just really gives you that Algonquin Roundtable feel. So very well done. And Dexter, your thoughts?
So I thought that this was a fantastic write. How many Fantasias have been made? I know that there's an old Mickey Mouse one. Was there a remake one that was kind of like trippy in the 80s or something? Or no, I'm thinking of Phantasm. So I have seen Fantasia. So never mind. So I thought that this was a fantastic piece. As always, Jack Blue ties in that color, you know, with throughout the piece. The heroic donkey's tomb for theater's musicality, beckoning rock and roll. This had a very resonating feel to it, and I love the abstract nature of it, to say my violin of mind. I love when people write like that, so I just thought that this was a great piece.
Absolutely, great comment. And Neutron, what'd you think?
Yeah, I was drawn to this section here. Roaming home, I found the ravens hovering away like remembering the skies. They sounded royal blue. It reminds me of the principle that one might taste color, that amalgam of senses. The ending is quite trippy when you think about it. As for the alliteration stanza that you recited, Richard, I was very impressed, even at the fact that he worked some accents in there as well. My favorite part by far was the lunar violet piano showering around the stone resounded like a gospel glow to my violin of mind. Just very nicely written.
Absolutely. Yeah, he has real talent and is kind enough to join us every other Thursday for the show. So we appreciate it. And Pam, I'll give you final word. What'd you think?
I really enjoyed this one. I have to say I'm probably going to overuse the word clever tonight because, once again, very clever. I really enjoyed how he used the classic German folktale of the Bremen band, the group of animals that got together and made a bunch of noise, which I think fits perfectly with the whole idea of their, you know, the quote and the whole idea of that there's that fine line between entertainment and noise that has no meaning, you know. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And where would you like to go next there, Neutron?
Okay, so if Dexter, you could read Cool Mail's poem, that would be great.
Absolutely. Oh, whoops, I clicked on the Jack Blue one again. Okay, hold on. Let me refresh. All right. This is Elements of Style by Cool Males. Omit needless work, said the little brown book. It's elements. They're still in style to gather rewards, be it Kindle or Nook. Though those have been gone for a while, don't be sparse with the farce and do read it out loud. If your sentences parse, then you've done it. Then you've done yourself proud. End poem.
Excellent read there, Dex. Yeah, I thought this was a nice musing on the classic text. And it had that kind of like fatherly advice, that Polonius vibe to it. And it was lyrical and light and just a really nice add to the evening. And Pam, what'd you think?
You know, I really enjoyed this one. I enjoyed that it brought it into modern times with the mention of the Kindle or the Nook. And I really like the phrases, don't be sparse with the farce and do read it out loud if your sentence is parse. Wonderful use of inner rhyme and just very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, what'd you think?
Well, I'll keep it pop. I agreed with both Richard and Pam. There was a sense of the whimsical to it. And the rhyming was fun. I found this to be quite a tongue-in-cheek, great little brevity. And good work, Cool Males. Well done.
Absolutely. And Dexter, as reader, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, I thought this was a fantastic piece. You know, it brought us back. It was interesting to think about the Kindle and the Nook. You know, it was here for a moment and then it was gone. But it really brought out an element of style. It's an element of style just to do a piece at that much of a brevity and just be able to say what they did. So I thought it was very well done.
Absolutely. Okay, with that, I'm turning it back to you, Neutron.
Okay, I'll just jump back onto the right screen. So the next poem I'll give a read is by Keith Palethorpe. Just a note, Dexter, if you did want a poem read tonight, we will probably have time, so I'll give you some advance notice anyway. But here is the poem by Keith Palethorpe. It's called Dot and Gert. you might as well live. But in the case of Calvin Coolidge, how did they determine that he had stopped? You are no longer in Kansas, Dorothy, because there is no there there. And a rose is a rose is a rose. Two women, two wit, two lives of ideas well lived, two models of defiant humanity. End poem.
Great read there, Neutron. Yeah, this was a very special brevity. It touches on, of course, Dorothy Parker quote, you might as well live. I won't go through the whole poem, but that's the punchline of the poem. All the different ways to commit suicide, and then she gives you the punchline, you might as well live. And then the joke about Coolidge, which is of the era. So you have to kind of know that Coolidge was one of those just boring type personalities. And then he kind of transcends the Algonquin Roundtable and takes us to a moving feast, and that scene that was going on in Paris that was actually often hosted by Gertrude Stein, who wrote A Rose is a Rose is a Rose. So Gertrude Stein is kind of like this matron of high art. Picasso is at her house. She names the writers of that Paris era, the American expats, which includes Fitzgerald and Hemingway, the lost generation, and is almost like the queen of high art in that same era that Parker is the queen of, I don't want to call it low art, but certainly the more accessible and less Nobel Prize writing. And to draw together and see the commonalities between these two powerful women, I thought was just a brilliant piece and really nicely done. Neutron, what'd you think of it?
Well, funny you should mention the line that she quoted in the poem is from Resume, and it's my favorite poem. If we have time, which we might just, I'll give the brevity a read at the end. And I simply adore the message of this poem. It's a pragmatic approach, and I appreciate the humor that Keith brought to the right. My favorite part was, you are no longer in Kansas, Dorothy, because there is no there there, and a rose is a rose is a rose. And Keith actually responded back, we might never have to write a new line if we uncover Dot and Gert's stashes, which I thought was epic.
Absolutely. And Pam, what'd you think?
This one is awesome. I really like how he pays tribute to these two women and the time era. I even like the end where he says, I wish I could have shoehorned Fran Lebowitz into the picture. And wonderful all the way through, but my favorite lines are, you are no longer in Kansas, Dorothy, because there is no there there. So wonderful lines and very well done.
Absolutely. And Dex, I'll give you final word on this one.
Yeah, I thought that this was very clever, very witty. You know, it just put a smile on my face listening to it. So very well done.
Excellent. Okay. Where would you like to go, Neutron?
Well, next, graciously, Pam has put one on the board for us. So we reach the end of the show. So Pam, when you're ready.
All right.
Well, I really
Pam,
admit
you...
I did Yes, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, so ironically, we were kind of worried it was going to go the other way, and then we got hit with a bunch of brevities. Is that what happened, Neutron?
Yeah, that's what happened.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks so much for putting this on the board for us, Pam. Go ahead.
Absolutely. And I will admit it's not to any specific prompt. I grabbed something that I kind of thought fit the humor and wordplay that has been in tonight's themes. So this is Mr. Willoughby's Pie Shop, and it goes like this. Mr. Willoughby's Pie Shop was filled with, yes, you guessed it, pies. But not ordinary pies, apple, cherry, strawberry, rhubarb, pumpkin. Mr. Willoughby considered these far too boring for his eclectic taste. The sign outside the shop read, come inside, don't be wary, try a pie that's extraordinary. Of course, people always had asked for typical pies, the kind that Grandma made in her kitchen. Mr. Willoughby would shake his head and say, no offense to your grandma, but I'm sure she's a lovely woman and a grand baker of atrociously boring pies. But that isn't what we offer here. Well, what do you offer here? The customer would ask. And Mr. Willoughby, who enjoyed the sound of his own voice almost as much as he enjoyed a warm, flaky crust and bubbly filling, would make a dramatic gesture towards the large sign hanging behind him, clear his throat, and begin his announcement. We have airy pie, berry, that's B-A-R-R-Y pie, nary pie, peri pie, and very, very scary pie, which isn't a bestseller. Asberry pie, bad fairy pie, canary pie, one bite will make you sing. Contrary pie, numbers that are primary pie, remarry pie, arbitrary pie, cemetery and mercenary pie, mercenary, both of those are killers. We have virginity pie, some eat this and you'll get it back. Trinity pie, bovinity pie, try to find your masculinity pie, a popular one with married men. Awry pie, bonsai pie, I think that I can fly pie. Don't eat this in high places. Pronunciation pie, castration pie, if not to ask what's in it. Propagation, reformation, suffocation, decapitation, all make the top of my pie chart. At this point, the customer would excuse themselves and quickly walk out the door. Mr. Willoughby would let out a sigh, shake his head and exclaim, such a shame. I was just about to tell them about dysentery pie. End poem.
What a wonderful and playful right there, Pam. I thought that was actually a perfect ad for a night of the Algonquin Roundtable. And the funny thing is, me coming from a math background, as soon as you started going into the pies, I was like, wow, yeah, it's like pie, you know, 3.14. And sure enough, you hit it. It's like, see that? So, yeah, I was right there with you. Yeah, it was encyclopedic, and I loved it. I thought this was just a wonderful answer to our night of Algonquin Roundtable inspired poetry. So just a wonderful piece there, Pam.
Thank you. And just to add
virginity pie, I like that one. if we could only get it back, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And and Neutron, what'd you think?
Oh man, I'm like, if I could roll on the floor laughing right now, I'd be doing that. But my back's too sore. I just have to say, I was getting Sweeney Todd vibes from this pie poem, especially when, where was it? Pronunciation pie, castration pie. Best not to ask what's in it. Propagation, reformation, suffocation, decapitation all make the top of my pie chart. You can just imagine the perplexed customer, almost wondering when they can make their fast exit. And then of course, you end with such a line, such a shame. I was just about to tell them about the dysentery pie. I just thought it was a touch of brilliance. And your selection for tonight was fantastic. Well done.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And Dexter, what'd you think?
I thought that this was awesome and hilarious. And I just, what I really appreciate about it, like probably most, is the, it was kind of humor, but the amount of thought that you put into this is what really makes it elite, I guess. I don't know, I don't want to see the word elite almost has a negative tone to it, but it's very high level funny. So I thought it was a great piece.
Thank you, Dexter.
Absolutely. And Neutron, what'd you think?
Oh, she already commented.
I already commented. We're on to the next one, I think.
Yeah, so I'm going to apologize. I have been having trouble sleeping these past couple of nights, so I'm a little halfway there, halfway asleep by now. Okay, on to our next one.
Okay, so we've got the Duke of Dex Bailey up next. When you're ready.
All right, and it's the Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey. I'm from St. Paul, Minnesota. So,
thank you. Sorry, my friend.
No, you're okay. You're okay. I just not everybody calls it the Duke of Step, and I think that that's kind of intriguing. It's almost like I'm a jazz musician or something, or like. anyway, do you got what it takes? You know that dance called the worm? One day in life, you're going to do that. Across the room, floor covered in broken glass. What are you going to do then? Hopefully have the you-know-what to even stand up. Just to begin crying about the glass in your face, your stomach, your knees. And on top of all that, everyone who is there walks away. What's more painful? The broken glass, the fact that everyone left, or the pain of feeling so stupid from doing the worm in the first place? You going to imagine you're someplace else, drink to the point it never happened? Maybe you will stick your arm out like a waving clearance sale Gumby and blame everyone. Go ahead, laugh. You're going to be the one doing the worm soon. All of my works are me picking the glass out of my chin and out of my you-know-what and then put it all into a pile and swallow it. You know why? Because I got style, noodle arms. You don't use them to pick up a pencil if you don't. Say what? Forget the worm? You're a blow-up doll. You'd pop in the first piece of glass, spin in fart circles across the room and die laughing? All right, you're a writer. You're in. I knew I liked you. End poem.
Excellent. Excellent right there. And Pam, if we could start comments off with you.
Yeah, this is great. I think it fits so perfectly with tonight's show. I really like how it takes a look at how oftentimes, that ending is just spot on, so spin in fart circle around the room and die laughing. All right, you're a writer, you're in. I knew I liked you. Because to me, it's on that whole idea of how, those difficult things that happen in life, those painful things that happen, and we learn to adjust to them with a sense of humor. And I like how it keeps having questions like, the broken glass, the fact that everyone left, or the pain of people from doing a worm in the first place. You're going to imagine you're someplace else, drink to the point it never happened. maybe you'll stick your arm out like a waving clearance sale Gumby and blame everyone. Those are just excellent lines there. I like how within the humor there is a message on the whole idea of how too often we find people to blame for our problems, you know, when really what we need to learn to do is just move on and march forward with a sense of humor and a pencil and paper and be prepared to just entertain the world with our goofiness. And so very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Excellent comment, Pam. And Neutron, your thoughts?
I just have to commend, Dex, your ability to intermingle pain and humor in such an apt manner. I was drawn to this section here. I write all of my works and me picking the glass out of my chin and out of my, you know what, and then put it all into a pile and swallow it. It's, as I said, a very apt description of the writing process, and I agree with Pam. It was a great selection for the show tonight. Very well done.
Thank you, Neutron.
Absolutely, Neutron. Yeah, I agree with both Pam and Neutron. I thought this was spot on for tonight, because really what we've got is a show about writers, and much of it is how they decide to use existential pain, existential suffering as grist for their literary mill. And that's what I really thought the poem was about. Gosh, who was it that said, take your pain and turn it into art? I forget, but that's what your poem reminded me of. And I just love writing about writers. So you got me from the get-go there, and especially that punchline ending. All right, you're a writer, you're in. I knew I liked you. This wonderful mix of humor and pain, and how it all whips together as art. So great, great piece.
Thank you, Richard.
Absolutely. Okay, Neutron. So I don't know if you had a piece of yours for the board to close us out.
Not tonight, but I just wanted to let you know it was Joey Collins that said the quote that you just mentioned there, from what I can find on my friend Google.
We
have time for one more. And I thought, seeing as Dorothy Parker kind of brought this into light today, the Algonquin round, I thought I would finish with a classic poem by Dorothy Parker, Resume, the one that has been hinted at throughout the show. So I thought I'd give some context, and that'll pretty much bring us up to the final comments and whatnot, and I'll give this one a read. So it's Resume by Dorothy Parker. Razors pain you, rivers are damp, acids stain you, and drugs cause cramp. Guns aren't lawful, nooses give, gas smells awful, you might as well live. End poem.
Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, what a great poem, right? Yeah, that is actually, when I think of Dorothy Parker, I think of her writing. This is the poem that I think of. Just perfect answer to, you know, why we continue to live in a very funny way that is kind of just, I don't know, it's irresistible. It's just an irresistible poem, you know, clever. And boy, she talks about acid staining you. I thought the poem itself is quite acidic. One of my favorite poems, period, but definitely my favorite by Dorothy Parker. And Neutron, tell us your thoughts on this classic poem.
Well, I have to say that for anyone contemplating or who has in the past, that this poem certainly brings you right back to reality. And just on a serious note, there was, I was watching this documentary that said that 9 out of 10 people aren't successful on their first attempt. And I think if you read the poem and you listen to the stories of people who have attempted suicide in the past, that it certainly might make you think twice, or three times as the case may be. But I just think a touch of the sardonic, maybe more than a touch, but it's certainly... you know, you might as well live. And I think she finishes it on a paramount phrase. So, yeah, I'll leave it there.
Absolutely. Yeah, great comment. Pam, your thoughts on this classic poem?
Well, I thought this classic poem by Dorothy Parker was dark humor and simple rhymes, you know, at its absolute best. I love the bite in this. I like how it kind of fits to me. It makes me think back to that one prompt about the whole idea of how sometimes if you want to get a message out, it has to be hidden. And the part where "and drugs cause cramp" really to me brings it to modern times with the use of so many drugs where the side effects are almost as bad as what they're supposed to be curing. So just a clever write and very well done. A great, great choice, Neutron.
Thanks, absolutely. Ben. Great comment. And Dexter, what'd you think?
Well, it's kind of, and I love this piece too for a brevity in it. Right, loved is kind of a weird word for it, I guess, but it's a very dark subject. And drugs cause cramps. You know, you always think about like, oh, the way that I would maybe go out is drugs and stuff. But what an agonizing, it is an agonizing process. You know, you're going to cramp up and you're going to do all of these things. But it reminded me of a George Carlin when he had a skit or a sketch, a little bit segment, I guess, of his stand-up about suicide, and he's like, where do you find the time to do it? And he goes, and these damn razors, you know, and he's trying talking about all of the razors are childproof to get open. It's always something. He's, you know, and it's kind of bringing light to it, but it reminded me a lot of that, and maybe he got it from this. I don't know, but I thought that this was a fantastic write and very dark.
Absolutely, yeah, very dark, and yet the end is an affirmation of living. So I want to make sure we have time to get this in. Pam, why don't you tell us what's coming up in 30 minutes?
Into the Darkness, where we will be reading poetry inspired by the legend of Jenny Greenteeth.
Very cool. Yeah, so stick around for that if you can. And I want to thank everyone that joined us on the air, Pam and Dexter, and of course my co-host, Neutron Bomb, and behind the scenes, Fill My Eyes, for making all this stuff happen, especially with the SoundClouds. And then special thanks, of course, to the poets that write for us every 2 weeks. Without you guys, there is no show. So we are truly appreciative. Okay. I think that's our show. We made it. We always do. Okay. Well, have a great night, everyone. Thanks again.
Night, Richard. Thank you.